Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
That's impressive. I've not heard that before.
That's a new one.
That's what I was thinking.
Huh. And with Rich doing the voice.
Yeah.
He's pretty good. He ought to go in the radio business. Oh. Well, welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. Happy Halloween, October 31st, 2013. This is Michael Norris. As always, I am joined by Jerry Oates and Bobby Simmons. You guys get tricks or treats today?
I don't get any where I live.
Yeah, we cut all the lights out and closed the doors, so we're very peaceful here.
I think the cyclone fence with the razor wire.
The pit bulls patrolling the compound. Well, we've had a family move in next door to us, and they got a Great Dane, man. It looks like a horse. You could saddle that thing up and ride it.
Oh, they get big, I'm telling you.
Oh, this guy's huge. And when he barks, man, the windows rattle.
Oh, they're monsters.
But we're gonna have to nudge Michael about every two or three minutes here to make sure he's awake.
Yeah, you are gonna have to do that. It's been a long week for me, and it's only Thursday. But my circus season is over. I'm in my old new home, and there's post-it notes, sticky notes everywhere.
Don't touch this. Don't do that.
No, it's from the realtor. Look out the window at the beautiful wooded view. Huh. I'm almost afraid to sit down. I might have to sleep on the floor. Oh, man. Well, we mentioned her last week, and unfortunately, last Saturday, we lost Chris Kelly. She passed. Well, I have not tried to call Bob because I know when my parents passed away what it was like for me, and I just, Bobby's talked to him a couple of times, so he can elaborate more on how Bob's doing and what's going on and everything, but we're all headed down there tomorrow for her funeral on Saturday. Her funeral's at 1 o'clock on Saturday. So I tell you, I'm just
Bob's not doing well, which can be expected. Him and Chris were married for 55 years. And I talked to him, Dave, yesterday, I guess. I talked to him for probably 15, 20 minutes, and he's just lost. I mean, the house is lonely, the bed's lonely at night, and it's just he just don't know what to do. You know, he told me yesterday, he said, she's been right beside me every step of my life for the last 55 years. And he said, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I'm sure it's been a long week, and it will be a long day Saturday for him. He's doing the viewing and the funeral and everything in one day. So just need to remember Bob. He's not only in the next couple of days, but in the weeks to come. He's just going to be a rough go.
Yeah, he's very close to her, and he came very close to losing her about 8 years ago. When she had heart problems or something at that point, and it was a miracle literally, from seeing her the way she was and everything to up and around within a few months. It was a miracle. And Chris was a wonderful lady. She was a wonderful lady. She was so funny, and so she was the brains of that outfit and the boss of that outfit, I tell you. And that's why I think Bob's going to have a hard time. But like Bobby said, keep your thoughts and prayers with him, not only for the next few days, but for the coming months, because you know, you got family, but it's like a spouse. And I didn't lose mine. I pushed her out the door. I'm still close to my ex-wife, and if something ever happened to her, I'm sure I'd be just as like of a basket case as Bob is. So,
well, he said something to me yesterday, and just, of course, he was crying, and we were talking, and he got me crying. He told me me and Debbie have been married 26, and I know Jerry's been married a long time. He's been married longer than I have, and you know, he told me, he said, Bobby, he said, this may sound silly to a lot of people. He said, we were married 55 years. He said, but we still went to sleep every night holding hands.
Well, I'm sure. I've never
and
seen
I just, I mean, they were
more
just,
in love
they were that close. So I just,
yeah.
I don't know. I really feel sorry for him. He's honored me by asking me to say some words at the service on Saturday. And at this point in time, I have absolutely no clue what I'm going to say. So. We'll see how it goes.
I'm not looking forward to this trip. I'm looking forward to seeing all you guys tomorrow, but I'm not looking forward to this trip.
I understand.
So, Jerry, you said you'd been off a couple of days. Would you get suspended for talking seashells on the to the tourists down there? What?
Yeah, I eased up on them.
Selling autographed pictures out of that little golf cart. Jeez. You can tell which golf carts Jerry's in. He's got them T-shirts with clothespins hanging up on it with for sale signs on them.
Don't think I don't. You got to get it while you can, brother. I'm telling you.
Well, we've probably talked about this. You know, Ox Baker was working as a greeter at Walmart.
I heard about it.
And he got fired for selling autographed pictures from $5 a piece.
Ox Baker gimmick table, aisle number 5.
Oh, jeez. They tried to get him to come to Mobile to the reunion one year, and he said the only way he would come was if they would allow him to sell his gimmicks. Of course, they don't allow anybody to sell anything out there, but I told him, I said, y'all should have told him he could sold them. I said, who would have bought them?
There you go.
You know, who would have?
Well, I'm sure you'd have had a few takers.
Well, maybe down there with some of the backyarders, but anyway.
Well, it being Halloween, I thought we'd take a look at some of the more unusual gimmicks from the wrestling business back in the territorial days. It kind of had a Halloween or a monster theme. I guess the most famous, and I don't know if you guys ever saw him or ever worked around him or ever came across him at all, was the Mummy. What was his name? Benji?
Benny Ramirez.
Yeah, Benji Ramirez or Ramirez. Did you have work with him, Jerry?
No, but I was around him in Kansas City. He was in Kansas City.
Was he still doing the Mummy gimmick?
No. I think he'd have done better if he had him.
Bill Bowman told me they talked him into, they had a tag team of the Mummies in the late 60s in Mobile, and it was he and Tony Gonzalez. And people were beginning to figure out that Tony Gonzalez was one of the medics, so they kind of did a switcheroo and had the medic work against killing somebody else as the Mummy. And he said that Mummy outfit had probably never been washed. He said that thing stank. I just cannot imagine going through putting that thing on every night of the week. But Benji,
it was
Benji
a big deal
well
out in Texas.
Out Texas with, yeah, I was going to say, he did real well with it out there, but... I just cannot imagine having to haul that thing around and then work in it and then probably afraid to wash it, afraid it'd come apart. But,
Charlie Smith tells the story that they brought, probably the same guy because I'm sure he was Spanish. They brought the guy in here. They were bringing him into Atlanta, and he showed up at the wrestling office. Now, this is in the 60s, early 60s. And Charlie says the guy showed up and said, he walked in and he said he was very dark complected, and he was of Spanish descent. And said Charlie said, "Wait right here." And he went back and told Charlie Harbin. He said, "The mummy's here." He said, "But I don't think we're gonna be able to use him because it was still a time in Atlanta where they did not have blacks and whites wrestling each other, and the guy was so dark complected."
Yeah, but he was totally
covered.
He was totally face and everything covered.
I said the only thing you could see was the back of his hands.
Well, they
that's it.
For whatever reason, Smitty said Harbin gave him $100 and told him to go back to Texas. Jimmy Powell told me, and I think it was a mummy gimmick, he told me that when he first started in the business working for Nick up there, and he was just a kid because he said his dad had to drive the ring in the trailer. And he had a deal where he would, I guess it was a mummy gimmick, where he was in a casket and they'd tote him out to the ring. And he'd get out of the casket
probably,
and work.
That was probably Cal Drummer. Also worked as Bulldog Drummer. He did a vampire gimmick where they brought
Jimmy
him out in a casket.
Well, Jimmy Powell said he did it. He did it in Tennessee for a while.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he said, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that was
maybe
the way
it
he told
was a mummy, but Count Drummer did it in Detroit and in Tennessee. They bring him out in a casket, and he come out with the cape and everything.
Jeez.
Well, Tennessee had a bunch of them. Well, let's go back to the mummy. Before Benji Ramirez, there was actually a mummy before Benji Ramirez. Back in the 40s, and it was Pedro Martinez who ended up being a big promoter and had the Buffalo territory in the late 60s and early 70s. But he did the mummy gimmick for a while. But Tennessee had, they probably had a half a dozen guys be Dr. Frank, which was a Frankenstein-type gimmick. I know Tommy Gilbert did it one time. Frank Morrell, I think, may have done it, or Frank may have been a mummy, I don't know. Then they had a Freddy Krueger.
Jeez.
The guy in a Freddy Krueger outfit. And then out in Los Angeles, they had a guy called the Monster, and he was in full Boris Karloff makeup. The flat head, the big boots, and all that stuff. That was a guy named Tony Fernandez.
Well, it worked with some flat heads. I don't know if it was him or not.
Well, I saw Herman Munster do that on TV. It might have been Fred Gwynn, moonlighting.
Could have been.
No, they probably borrowed the outfit from him, though.
Let me throw a casket story at you. It ain't got nothing to do with the wrestling business. This is many years ago. We had a haunted house at our church, and we had borrowed a casket from a funeral home here in Atlanta, and it was one of those. It's just one of those real cheap cardboard-looking things, you know. But we had it in our little haunted house that we had for Halloween and whatever. We had this guy that we went to church with, and he's dead now, God rest his soul. His name was Doyle Lawson, and Doyle looked like death warmed over on days he felt good. I mean, he weighed about 85 pounds, and his bones protruded. I mean, he was just a little bony fella, and he looked. I mean, really, he looked half dead, you know, walking around. And we were getting ready to break the haunted house down, and he made the remark. He said, "I've often wondered what it would be like laying in one of those when people tote you." And so we told him, we said, "Well, if you'll get your little butt in here, we'll tote you outside." So he laid down in this casket, and we toted him out the front door of the church. And we set him down on the walkway in front of the church, and he raised the lid up and sat up. And when he did, there happened to be this woman coming down the road in a Volkswagen bus, a little minivan. You remember how flat they were on the front?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you know, it was just a windshield straight up and down almost. There was a MARTA bus stopped at a big transit bus stopped at the bus stop picking some people up. That woman hit the back of that bus, never hit her brakes, never did anything. She seen him raise up out of that casket, son, and just absolutely run into a bus.
Did y'all break and run?
Listen, well, we run over to check on her, and she told us, she said, oh, my brakes failed. And we got away, and I told him, I said, we better get that casket out of here, and we better vamoose. Son, that woman seen him set up just show as I'm sitting here and hit that bus. We lucky it didn't kill her. But we really didn't think, I mean, we wasn't trying to, you know. But can you imagine riding down the road and seeing a casket and somebody open the door and get up? I'd be like Louis Grizzard where he told us, if you're going to set up, I believe I'll go on to the house. But that didn't have nothing to do with the wrestling business, but that's a true story. I just thought about that with the casket thing. We didn't have a lot of that stuff in Georgia, Michael. I don't guess they... Jerry, do you remember much of that stuff here?
I don't remember anything like that, Bobby.
Yeah, we didn't have nothing. I mean, I'm sure people made a lot of a decent living and there was a lot of crazy stuff went on in this business, but we didn't have nothing like that. I mean, the wildest thing we ever had here was when Abdullah the Butcher first got here, because nobody had ever seen nothing like him or like that around here.
Yeah, I don't really remember any off-the-wall stuff.
I don't either.
Well, probably Abdullah and the Sheik and his few rides through Georgia were probably about the wildest that ever happened there.
And I don't remember the Sheik coming through here much till Abdullah got here.
Probably not. Because those two were natural. They worked against each other all over the world. And never applied one wrestling hold the whole time.
and there was nothing to it. There was nothing to it.
And if you added up all of the thousands of matches they had, they probably didn't even come up with 10 hours worth of work.
Right.
5 minutes of a double disqualification.
Fight out through the crowd.
Jeez. Well, Mobile never really had. Well, we had the mummy thing that, like I just mentioned, and then we had Duke Savage, not Dutch Savage, Duke Savage, who was a wild man. You know, Al Galento was his manager, and Al, he wouldn't even come from the dressing room. They'd have him out in the parking lot with Al with a chain around his neck, and then he'd drag him through the building to the ring, and then once he got in the ring, he'd take that collar off, and he'd beat everything in the ring, the referee, his opponent, Galento, everything, and then they'd finally calm him down and put that chain back on him and haul him back out to the parking lot. They did that twice, and two different times. They did it in the 60s and then came back and did it in the 70s with that same gimmick.
Well, now, we had a couple of wild men come through here.
Tretch Phillips
was Wild Man Phillips. I remember, you know, I never got to be in the ring with him, but I saw him a lot of times when I was.
He's about the wildest thing I remember as a kid, Bobby.
Yeah.
Didn't he wear like cut off long johns and combat boots or something like that?
His hair was real long.
Yeah.
And a beard.
And a beard, yeah, big scruffy beard. And then we had another guy come through here. This was about the same time when Moondog Bane was here, and he was a buddy of his, and they called him the Wild Man, but he wasn't a big fella. He was just a little bitty fella, but he did jobs, but they called him the Wild Man. But
we had another Wild Man in Mobile, and that was Don Fargo. He lived up to that. he went through a wild man gimmick there for a while. It seemed like he could change overnight. He'd go from a bleach blonde pretty boy to a biker type, and then but he lived every one of those gimmicks.
That's why they were believable.
Yeah. About the craziest I've ever heard, and this Lars Anderson did this. He was out in California. And again, this was in the dying days of the Los Angeles territory. It was maybe a year or two before they had the monster. But he was out there and had his arm in some sort of metallic sling or something like that, and had a little guy with a box with lights on it and switches on it. And he was the bionic wrestler. The guy throw a switch or something, he'd all of a sudden that arm would go crazy.
Oh, jeez.
I can believe
it's
that.
It's no wonder California died a horrible death of it. And, you know, you would think Los Angeles being in the entertainment capital of the world, they were very successful for very many years, but it just, at the end, it was just pitiful.
Well, I'll tell you something else. When Lars was here, he was sort of bionic too when he would medicate himself.
Yeah, I've been around him doing that.
Oh, geez.
A lighted box.
When he was halfway straight, he was all right. You could work with him, deal with him, but he'd get on that stub, you couldn't talk to him. He's a strange bird.
I think he's eating mushrooms or something, man.
Yeah.
What he, man.
We were somewhere in South Georgia. I forget where we went. We went somewhere down there, and they booked two spot shows 50, 60 miles apart right on that Florida line. Might have been Quitman, Valdosta, Nashville. Could have been anything, but along that Georgia line. That Georgia-Florida line, and the two shows were like the middle of the week, and they were close. So everybody that went down there was staying over. He drove down there by himself, drove all the way back to Atlanta by himself, drove all the way back down the next day by himself, and then all the way back home. And when he left that night, his eyes looked like they had toothpicks holding them up. They were so wide. And when he got back the next night, they were the same way. So I don't know what he was taking to stay awake, but buddy, he was. I'm glad I wasn't working with him.
Well, I can promise you, he wasn't sleepy.
No, he wasn't. He probably hadn't been to bed. Ooh,
I can't imagine that.
We talk about monsters and these gimmicks, Michael. You know, I mean, some of these guys. I was talking to Gene Bennett today on the phone. I told him, I said, there was a lot of guys I considered to be monsters that didn't even really have a monster gimmick. But, I mean, they were scary because you couldn't trust them. You didn't know what they were going to do.
That's true.
They didn't know what they was going to do.
That's the scary part.
That's what scared you.
Yeah.
I was about to ask you, Jerry. Bobby's pretty much covered it because he worked a lot of Sheik Abdullah matches. Who was the craziest person you ever wrestled? You wrestled the Sheik, didn't you?
Yeah, that wasn't nothing to that. You know, it was. I just stood in the ring watching him run around outside mostly. And,
he didn't get you with the pencil.
Oh, he had everything with him. Like he worked for Staples.
It's like a hardware store.
Yeah, exactly.
Coat hangers, pencils, forks.
I'll tell you who was crazy to work with at certain times was Mike Boyette.
Oh, yeah. That's more than certain times, I'm sure.
Well, he hardly medicated himself there a few times.
Yeah.
He was weird sometimes.
He was all, you know, he had a judo background, but he was all knees and elbows.
Yeah, he was.
I saw Danny Hodge get a great match out of him. Of course, Mike was probably afraid to do anything awkward. But
if he was straight, you could do all right with him, you know. But it was one of those deals like Bobby was talking about. You never know what you was getting.
Well, yeah, he had a strange stuff. Did you ever work with Gypsy Joe Rosario? That was another one that had an awkward style to it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Pancho Valdez?
Yeah, I worked with him.
Was he hard to work with?
Not really. Not really.
He just had a herky-jerky motion about him. Snake Brown reminded me a lot of Gypsy Joe Rosario. A whole lot.
Oh, Snake. The Snake or something else. You'll see him, Bobby.
Snake Brown?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't ever see him up around here. I don't know what happened to him.
Oh, you don't see him anymore?
No. Somebody told us, or somebody told me that there was a guy up in Rockmart, when they were running shows up there regularly, they said it was a guy up there that told everybody he was Snake Brown. So I had the occasion to go up there for something, and I was curious, and the guy it wasn't him.
It wasn't him.
No.
But where did he live up there, Bobby?
Carrollton. He was a funny sucker.
He was a nice guy, you know.
Oh, yeah, nice guy. We was on TV one Saturday. Somebody twisted his arm. He looked at me and he says, "Would you tell him to loosen up? I may need that later on today."
Oh, he didn't even work snug. I mean, you didn't even know you was in there with him.
Did he ever work anywhere but Georgia?
Not that I know of. The sucker had the look, and I mean, he was one of them kind of people that could get heat just looking at him, and probably could have made a lot of money if he'd have been willing to travel. He just wouldn't leave home.
Georgia had a lot of those guys like that.
Buck Brannigan.
Yeah.
Only wanted to send him to Charlotte, and he wouldn't go. I mean, that's like sending you to where they print money, and, you know.
Exactly.
Well, Snake worked for you some, didn't he, Jerry? When you were
no,
promoted.
I never used him.
Did?
I didn't think about him. Nobody ever mentioned him, you know. I would tell guys, if you see somebody out there, if I hadn't seen them in a while, you know, let me know, you know. But nobody ever mentioned Snake.
I thought about you today, Jerry, on the clip of the day on Rich's website was some guy named Jerry Graham Jr., whoever that was, wrestling Moose Sholok.
Oh, man.
The poor soul.
The big moose standing outside the ring with that moose head on.
Was that a fright? Everybody should have done that at least once in their career.
He pushed this poor guy into the corner, and he was just backing off and running into him. And the announcer says, "That ring's moving about 2 inches every time he does that." And I thought to myself, "That guy in that corner's moving about 2 inches."
Yeah, really.
Jerry Graham Jr. he's still around. He doesn't wrestle anymore. Jerry Jeffy was his name. He was from up that way. He and Dave Brzezinski were big friends. And he got in with Graham, Dr. Jerry, and he deemed him his son. So that's how that worked. They worked together a couple of years up around Detroit. But,
I thought of both of you guys today. I was coming from Valdosta up this way, and I passed the exit for Rumble Road.
Jerry probably didn't frequent Rumble Road much going back and forth to Columbus.
I don't know about Rumble Road, Bobby. Y'all got something.
Rumble
on
Road was the first exit after you come off of 475 coming toward Atlanta. and there was a Shell gas station. It was a truck stop, but it was a small one, and they had a little old restaurant there. And that's where we all used to stop and eat coming home. And they had a waitress in there, and she was, I don't know, she wasn't she wasn't going to win the Miss Georgia contest. She wouldn't have won the Miss Forsyth contest, but every time we'd go in there, me and Soto would go in there, she'd run over to the jukebox and play "I'm Having Your Baby." I kept telling Soto, "You need to take care of that. We'd be getting free supper here every night."
He could have been involved in that. You never know.
He'll tell you in a heartbeat, though, that was Manny. That wasn't him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Oh, man. I think that Shell station is still there. Was it to the, when you got off the Jackson, to the right?
Yes, to the right. Last time I was down that way, it wasn't they don't have the restaurant anymore, but there's still a station there.
Yeah, it was there. I looked, see, I couldn't remember if that was where you and Rocket stopped and he got the invisible hamburger or not.
No, that was up at 138 there in Jonesboro. They had a little, that was a little single wide trailer. They had it built out behind the gas station there.
Well, I bet that waitress is still there waiting for Soto to come back through.
You could very well be. One of the funniest stories I've heard told, and I've had three people tell me, so I know it's true. Soto, Charlie was up in Rome selling his gimmicks, and him and Gene Bennett were sitting there at the table. And some woman come up. Charlie had some wrestling magazines or old programs or something on the table. And some woman flipped over the program. She said, "Oh, there's Roberto Soto." Said, "My granddaughter got a baby by him." Said, "Do y'all know where he's at?"
Oh, come on.
Charlie said, "No, ma'am, we don't."
Yeah.
He got around.
Well, when he came up for the Ted Allen show back in February, that's the first wrestling match he had been to in, what, Michael, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, at least.
Something. He was standing over in the corner, and we got this girl to go to him and say, "Is your name Roberto Soto?" And he said, "Well, maybe." She says, "My mama says you my daddy." he said, "Charlie Smith."
He didn't leave the building, did he?
No, I thought we was over with him. We wasn't going to let him run. Oh.
My friend Roberto.
Funny guy.
He is one of a kind. Funny thing is getting talking about the time. He was on the bullet train in Japan. Fez walked up to him and said, "You're in my seat." he touched him one Fez out one up one side and down the other. He said, "I don't care if he's a shooter or a hooker or anything else. That don't mean I gotta give my seat up to him."
I hear him now.
He said when they turned him heel in Puerto Rico when he was working as one of the invaders, they stuck him with a manager, and his manager carried a cane with him, and a fan took the cane away. he stopped the match, got outside the ring, walked up to the fan and grabbed the cane away from him and carried it back over to his manager and said, "If you can't hang on to this, don't bring it out here."
That's pretty pathetic, isn't it?
Oh, man.
I've seen some videos. I never had the privilege of working over there. But I've seen some videos, man. That's a wild place.
It is now, yeah. Sure enough.
Rocket told me they used to stand outside and sell rocks for a penny apiece to throw at the guys.
I went there one time for a week. I never went back.
One of the funniest things I ever heard was Ted Dillon about he had been over there when Ann was sending guys over there and he was getting ready to come home and they had a water shortage, so they was cut the water off 7-8 o'clock at night and they wouldn't turn it back on till 8-9 o'clock the next morning, and he had a real early flight. He told me, he said, I took a bar of soap, a towel, and he said, I went down and got in the shallow end of the swimming pool. Took a bath.
Yeah, that place is dang. They kill cops down there like rats.
Ooh.
They told us not to walk around at night by yourself on the street.
Jeez.
I stayed in my room.
I heard that. Bill Bowman tells us, well, of course, I'd heard the story about, you know, Jerry Graham came in down there. They had worked somewhere, and they came in. They were all standing. There was a bunch of them standing at the El San Juan. And evidently there was a swimming pool that was right in the lobby of the hotel. And he came in and dove in the hotel into the pool and stripped naked. And he could swim like a fish and could float on his back. And he was butt naked floating on his back around the pool. He said Bill was standing across the street somewhere, and somebody told him that he used to be Bill Nim's manager, and they went over and got Bill out to go over there to get him out of the pool.
They probably never seen anything like him before.
And he didn't care either, you know. He fit right in.
Ooh.
Oh, man.
Is Joe Turner listening tonight, Michael?
No, he is not on the line.
He told the story. If he was here, I'd let him tell it. But he told the story. They were in Dothan, and he said Jerry come to the. Said there was several of them sitting around the pool or where they were staying. And said Jerry came in and he had a six pack or case of beer, or whatever it was. And he just throwed them all in the swimming pool. Now, of course, sunk to the bottom. And they said he dove in the pool, and they said he'd float around on his back and drink beer. And he said when he had finished one, he'd throw the can out of the pool on the side of the pool, and he'd roll over and go down, pick nothing up, and come back up and get on his back again, and said he drank till he run out.
Oh, man, can you imagine tracing out to that pool with your kids?
Oh, geez.
You know, taking you on vacation, you're going to have to partake of this nice, lovely pool. And Jerry Graham floating around out there on his back with a beer can resting on his belly. Oh, man. A bleached blonde whale out in the swimming pool.
How old was he when he died, Mike?
You know, I don't know. He had to have been in his late 60s, early 70s, I don't know. I don't even know for sure what year he died.
I don't know how he lived to be that old.
Well, he's probably pickled.
Ooh.
It's like Don Fargo. Don Fargo's never going to die. He's preserved. He's got everything in him stronger than formaldehyde as it is. He'll outlive. When they have nuclear war, there'll be three things left in this world: cockroaches, Don Fargo, and Keith Richards.
You can listen.
Everything else will be gone. Oh, man. Was Don up there at Scott's, Bobby?
Yes, he was there.
Who'd he come with?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure who he came up with.
Oh, man.
I know Joe brought Ramey or Lucas up.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure who brought. Oh, I know who it was. It was a Gary, the kid that manages and runs a show over in Chipley. What's his name? Gary Johnson?
Yeah, Gary Johnson. Okay.
Yeah, Gary brought him up.
Crazy old Fargo.
He did some pictures. he drew some pictures and presented them to several people, and he presented one to Mac McMurray, which was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it was big enough that you could hang it over your sofa or something, but it was caricatures, is that the way you say it?
Yeah.
Of a bunch of the different guys, and they were on crutches and wheelchairs and walkers, and in the caption he put on it was, "United we stand, divided we fall." But it was a neat picture.
Does he ever make any money with his talent doing that?
Yes. He paints murals on buildings down around Pensacola. People hire him to come in and paint them on the side of buildings and stuff.
I'd be afraid what he might paint. I sure stand out there and watch him, wouldn't you?
Or he'd get halfway through it and get him some medication and never come back. But I tell you, that's one person. If he slips away from this world and they don't get his story down in a book somewhere, I can just imagine the stories that Joker can tell.
Scott is just about, I mean, I say he's putting finishing touches on it. He's working on it, has been working on it now for
probably
a year.
I know he has been, but I wasn't sure if Fargo started with somebody else doing it and then walked away from it, so I wasn't sure if he...
No, Scott's going to get it done, I think.
We're good. Think of all the gimmicks between the Fargos, the Dolphins, the Chain Gang, the Legionnaires. That man's had more gimmicks than that. I think he and Randy Colley are just about neck and neck. That's the most gimmick. But unbelievable. That's one book that I will definitely buy, no matter the cost on it, because I've seen some of his antics personally. how many toothbrush and cigar stories end up in that book? But you could write a whole book just on all the antics that he and Jackie did together.
I don't know which one. I don't know what gimmick he was doing, if it was the Daltons or what it was down in Florida or in Mobile. But they left. I don't know if it was. Might have left Chipley, Florida, or somewhere. I can't remember where Rocket told me, but Rocky McGuire was riding with Rocket, and they were going down the road, and the Fargos or Daltons or whoever they were passed them running about 100 miles an hour. And Rocky looked over at Rocket and told him, he said, "You know, somewhere up around the curve or up here somewhere," he said, "they're going to be naked." And Rocket said, "Yeah." I said, "I know." So they were out of sight, and said about 2 minutes later, a Florida State Patrol passed them doing about 100 miles an hour, chasing them. And he said they went about 3 or 4 miles. And he said when they got up there, he said the state trooper had them out up against the car, and they were butt naked. And they were.
Well,
they tossed the car behind them was Rocket and Rocky, and that state trooper had them out against the car.
Oh, I can just imagine.
I can't remember who did it to him, but I want to say this was Brian Blair that they did it to. When Brian Blair first got into business down in Florida, they told him a rite of passage was to get in the trunk of the car and get naked, and then when you toot the horn, you stand up naked in the back of the car. And he said, "You know, we'll wait till one of the guys gets up behind us, and then we'll have you stand up." And so he got in the trunk, got naked, and they backed the car up to a plate glass window of a restaurant and tooted the horn.
Now that's low down, eh?
Oh, that's almost as bad as Gene Anderson pulling Randy Corbin's britches down in front of a bunch of girls.
Hanging him on that fence.
You know, in normal society, somebody would have been arrested for all this stuff.
Well,
Oh man.
Wasn't it Jackie and Don that picked the hitchhiker up and shot one of the other with a blank pistol and
yeah.
the guy thought they'd kill
yeah.
one of them or something?
Yeah, that was him and Jackie did that.
Jeez.
I bet that guy quit hitchhiking, didn't he?
Oh.
Imagine somebody ought to really write a book about all the different ribs and, that have been pulled over the years. If you could ever collect them all or ever separate the truth from the exaggeration.
Oh, that's the thing, yeah.
Well, most of them aren't believable anyhow.
And those are the ones that are true.
That's the true ones.
Jeez.
Somewhere in there, it'd have to be the Ken Lucas spaghetti story. I hate he didn't want to tell it last week.
He was too ashamed, wasn't he?
Well, that's like the night we were talking about doing stuff, and Jerry told the story about him with what's Don Owens' brother that you cut his pants?
Nelson.
Yeah. See? That's so out of character for you. How's anybody going to believe that? I mean, I know you did it, but, I mean, that's so out of character for you.
It was, wasn't it, Bobby?
It was. I mean, you know, you never did nothing like that. Or if you did, when you never got caught.
Until I started hanging around Johnny Eagles.
Did Johnny ever pull the thing when you were around him with going into a restaurant, going to the bathroom, and coming out with toilet paper stuck to his shoe with a baby
hood
wrapped in
a
box?
No.
He took it from Opie. Come out of a restaurant with toilet paper, a train of toilet paper hanging from his shoe with a baby Ruth wrapped in.
Johnny, I don't know if y'all was ever around him much, but that joker, man, I'm telling you, he was something else.
Can you imagine he and Ken Lucas in the same territory?
No.
Like we're in Mobile.
Can't imagine. Lucas, without a doubt, the biggest rubber I've ever been around. You just don't know if he's telling you straight up or what.
Yeah, if he can tell something, his face will be just as serious as it can be. And you just don't know whether to believe him or not. It's like he just put Soto with the duck barking at about cows.
That's funny. That is funny. Of course, Soto didn't think it was funny, but it was funny.
No. Well, that was what was so fun about it, watching Soto get mad. I aggravate him just to get him mad because it's funny to me. One of these days he's going to pop me with one of those lefts and it won't be all that funny. But oh, man.
Soto has such a it's a dry sense of humor sometimes.
It is very dry.
He says things that he's not trying to be funny and are just hilarious. There's a young lady who comes to the reunion every year that we aggravate him about, and she went back. She had ate supper there Friday night or whatever. And she went back and she dumped the tray in the garbage can, and she come back by Soto. She patted him on the shoulder. And she said, "How you not, baby?" And she went and sat down. So I walked over and I said, "Hey," I said, "Okay, I'm telling you, buddy, she's ready." He said, "I'm not sure she was patting me on the back or she was wiping her hands off."
Oh man. Well, guys, I hate to cut it short, but I'm just about to doze off here. So, and it's not because of you two. You guys have been wonderful company. But this week is going to be, at least for the time being, this is going to be my last week for a while. I've got
I've got to get settled here in my house here in Atlanta, but I've also got things going on in Mobile that's going to start breaking loose starting tomorrow. So I don't know when I'm going to have to go back down there to deal with some of this stuff, and I can't commit to being somewhere where I'm going to be on a Thursday night. But I know Rich is going to do the show next week with you guys and talk about this year's inductees into the Georgia Wrestling History Hall of Fame, so that ought to be a good show.
That'll be fun.
I'm hoping things will settle down and I'll get enough accomplished in the month of November that in December I can come back and at least do one or two shows a month or something for a while until I can get back on full time. But we're just going to have to play it by ear and see what happens. But I'm sure something will come along and we'll keep the show going. But I'm just going to have
we'll
to
miss
bow
you.
Out
we'll miss
a few
you.
Weeks.
Yeah.
Well, I'll miss it too, but I just hate to, because I know I'd end up missing so much time having to deal with this. I'm not looking forward to dealing with it, but I want to get it over with and be done with it and move on.
I understand.
But, guys, as always, it's been fun, and you guys have a good show next week. And, Bobby, I'll see you tomorrow.
All righty.
And Charlie's going to pick me up. I know I'm going to be – my knuckles are going to be white between riding from Snellville to Hayville tomorrow. All I can do is hang on.
There you go.
Keep my eyes closed. I'll probably have to give him $5. Isn't that what they charge at the carnival to scare you?
There you go.
All righty. Well, I will I'll talk to you guys soon, and we'll get together, or you guys will get together with Rich and do this again next week, and have a good show, and good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, Mike. Take care, buddy. Bye, Bobby.
No.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast. Production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.